hey, can we talk leadership? I want to talk leadership. How do I lead people? Because I know now, and you asked, like, how's it going? I mean, I'm a year and a half in, and for the first 7 or 8 months, it was a struggle. That's real. It was a struggle to try to figure out how to lead, how to be the leader that they need, how to be the leader that they deserve, and also one that's willing to go to the battle.
Are you curious about the transformative power of leadership in mathematics education? Ever felt the challenge of aligning your strategic plan when it seems like you're constantly putting out fires? Join us in this episode where we unravel the critical importance of seeking support in leadership roles and dive into a conversation with Rob Beyer, Executive Director of Mathematics and STEM at Pittsburgh Public Schools.
If you're an educator navigating the complexities of coaching, consulting, or directing, this episode is your guide. Rob Beyer, co-host of the Debate Math podcast, shares insights on staying aligned to your strategic plan amidst chaos, the significance of learning how to instruct mathematics educators, and the key to optimizing coaching and professional learning models.
Stick around and you'll gain a profound understanding of why seeking appropriate support is crucial for educators stepping into leadership roles. You'll discover the transformative potential of leading mathematics educators, offering a fresh perspective for educational leaders. And you'll uncover actionable insights on reviewing coaching models, ensuring they optimally serve educators and staying aligned with district visions and strategic plans.
Ready to elevate your leadership game in mathematics education? Listen in and lead with newfound passion and impact. Don't miss this chance to reshape your approach and empower both educators and students across your organization.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree. If you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, your impact will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or educators that you serve. All right, my friends, let's dig in with Rob, our good friend and colleague. He's back from episode, 54? Something crazy, 53. Let's dive in with Rob right now. Hey there, Rob. Thanks for joining us again here on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Some of you might be thinking, like, Rob who? This is Rob. Rewind over 200 episodes ago. And Rob was with us on the podcast and we've been in touch. And actually, John and I have actually been on your podcast that you do with Chris Lesniak. And we've had a blast over there debating, arguing, defending, doing all kinds of great stuff. So definitely check out the Math Debate podcast for those who are listening. But we're just happy to have you back here, Rob. Tell us, how are things going down in Pittsburgh? Assuming you're still in Pittsburgh. I'm just assuming you're still there.
Yeah, still in Pittsburgh. Things are great. I'm glad that I'm back with you guys. It's been a while. It has been a while. This podcast, episode, 54. Wow, that feels like ages ago, especially because the journey I've been on since then has been a wild one. And then the Debate Math podcast with Chris has been fantastic. It's been one of my favorite things to do. It's a passion that Chris and I have, and things are going really well. And we're prepping right now for season 3. That'll come out in January. I don't know when this will be released. So if it's already past January, go back and listen to all of our episodes before that.
Love it. Love it.
But no, I mean, we're starting off with season 3 where there's more heavier hitting math arguments that are happening in the world for math. and we're going to lean into it and we're going to see where it goes. I don't know if we're going to do any more hot dogs and sandwiches for this season, but that was awesome though. That was still one of my favorites. Your girls were awesome. So
Awesome. Yeah, that was a blast.
They're still talking about it nowadays, you know?
Exactly. So. If you're not sure what we're talking about, Kyle and I and our two daughters, each of us brought one of our daughters. I have three daughters, so I brought one of them. I picked the best one and then brought her on.
Ace
we debated.
The sleeve.
It was a hot dog, a sandwich. So each side took a stance. So we'll put that in the show notes, a link to Rob and Chris's podcast, the Debate Math podcast. We had a blast doing that podcast. But Rob, the other thing we want you to do is fill us in a little bit too, because when we last chatted, you were a classroom teacher. And in episode 54, we talked about what an effective math block should look like. And we talked all about that, but you're right. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. So there's been a lot has changed since then with you. We know that you are newly in the role, or I guess a year and a half maybe now, in the role of K-12 Executive Director for Science STEM at the Pittsburgh Public Schools. So fill us in a little bit about that role itself. And we'd love to dig in. What are some of the things that you're working with on a regular basis in that role? Because I think most of our listeners, or a lot of our listeners, are in, say, that leadership role of either their school or at the district level or the division level, or they're just classroom leaders amongst the peers that they work with on a regular basis, and would love to kind of get a sense of what did that look like? What does that journey look like? What are the things that we should know if we want to move into that role or move up into those supporting positions? Give us a snapshot.
Yeah. So way back when I was first on the podcast, I think I was either a classroom teacher or just out and maybe doing some consulting and coaching type things for an educational service agency that I was with for like 4.5 years. And then this role was open for like a while, probably about 2 years-ish. It was open and I kept looking at it and going, maybe I could do this. I mean, I feel like I have a good skill set. I was successful as a classroom teacher. I was having some pretty good success as a consultant slash coach for this educational service agency that was working as like an intermediary between the state and the school districts, and like really supporting like 25 districts in Southwest PA. And I felt really good about my skill set. And I said, yeah, I'll try this. And I applied. I went through a couple interviews and I got hired. And I didn't have a direct, our chief academic officer, she wasn't there yet. So there was a transition there for leadership. And we also had a transition as a superintendent for leadership. So I kind of got into the role and the role wasn't there for 2 years. And there's also nobody leading it really at the time. So I just kind of had to figure it out. So I leaned back on what I did as a consultant. And I thought, hey, I'm really good at working with teachers and working with principals. And this will be cake. I'll just go out. I'll be in schools all the time. This will be fantastic. Well, we have 54 buildings and they range from, we have K-5 buildings, K-8 buildings, 6-8 buildings, 6-12 buildings, 9-12 buildings. I think I hit them all. And we're over 20,000 kids. It took me a year to figure out, I probably can't go into every building all the time and just do math.
But you tried. Did you try?
Initially, I did. I got out.
You're like, I'm going to hit this. Next week, I'm going to hit this one. I'm going to hit this one. That's my goal. I'm going to get in every building.
I had a schedule. It was color-coded. My parts of the city. I was like, oh, I'm going to go here. I'm going to meet with that principal. I'm going to do this. And it's a system that it's so large. I didn't know how large it was going to be and like how tough it was going to be. And then on top of that, I oversee science and STEM as well. And so then I have to also lean into our science standards have changed in Pennsylvania. So we are in the process of shifting everything there. We had to go through a textbook adoption for that. For STEM, we're trying to push more robotics and computer science, especially for our K-5. And it got to be where I didn't realize that the skill set I had, I needed to evolve it. And it was a journey for sure.
I love it. I love it. I'm brought back to my experience. I spent close to a decade in first coaching and then K-12 consulting role. So similar role, but for mathematics specifically. And in my district, it was 71 schools, high school, mostly K-8 and then 9-12s, but we had some K-12s and we had a couple middle and that sort of thing. So similar, your story is kind of, I'm seeing it. Something that's I remember is thinking about, yeah, I'm going to try to get to everywhere. And then when you just do the simple math, you start to recognize that you're like, oh, even in one building, if I got into one building, how do I get to all the important stakeholders that I want to meet with, right? So this is a challenge that so many people have. And the part that I mentioned we were briefly discussing before we hit record today is this idea that we get put into these positions, but nothing that we've actually done ahead of that has actually prepared us for how to deal with that logistically, right? So it's like, if you could just take all those schools and kind of put them all together into one building all year long, we might be able to make some moves here, make some waves. But just the logistical nightmare of trying to get here and there and who's ready for you and who's available this day and who's ready that day, it's an incredibly difficult situation. So I guess what I'm wondering, you mentioned evolving, and I think that's a great word to describe it, because when we're working with school districts, we're working with their district leadership team. Oftentimes, that's what we're discussing, is that unfortunately, people enter in oftentimes into these roles, and it is an evolution. But the question then becomes is, how long is it going to take us to engage in that evolution where we can get to a place where there's a tipping point, where there's real momentum that starts? We call it, you feel like the wheels are stuck in the mud. And it's something that's a really hard thing to do, especially without proper support. So I guess I want to go back to you and say, what would you say is maybe, well, I guess, how's that going so far? But then also, what would you say is sort of the greatest support that you've either received or sought out in order for you to nudge that evolution a little bit further down the line, instead of just sort of waiting for it to sort of organically happen over time through just time and experience?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics, so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Well, so it's interesting, because as I thought about this journey and even getting into being an executive director, as I reflect, it's not really much different than when you leave college, university, and get into teaching, where like you're not really prepared, but you're prepared in the perfect world of the textbook. And then you get in and life happens and you're like, whoa, I need to learn real quick. These kids are real people. They're in front of me. I need to figure this out and do what's best for them. And then as you continue that journey and you get into maybe building level administration, or even before that, if you get into being like a coach of some kind, like a math coach or an academic coach for a district, that's a different skill set, because now you're training adults and you haven't taken classes on andragogy and how to train adults, because they learn in a certain manner and it's different. So then you move into building level administration. Yeah, you've taken courses, but nobody really prepares you for those hard conversations you have with, whether it's teachers who are facing an angry parent or union issues or whatever. So they each have their own thing. So as I got into this, I have some people that are friends of mine throughout the years that were professional friends that have become friends, who were superintendents that have moved into assistant executive director roles. People I trust, people who are true leaders, that I reach out to them and, hey, can we talk leadership? I want to talk leadership. How do I lead people? Because I know now, and you asked, like, how's it going? I mean, I'm a year and a half in, and for the first 7 or 8 months, it was a struggle. That's real. It was a struggle to try to figure out how to lead, how to be the leader that they need, how to be the leader that they deserve, and also one that's willing to go to battle to do what's right for kids. And the other thing I found is that as you move into these roles, please don't forget why you got into education to start with. You got into education for kids. So even though the further removed you are from the classroom, and I've seen it happen way too many times, where people forget that we're here for kids. And as long as you can keep that focus on kids, you're going to continue to want to get better because it's about the kids. So like for me, I have 10 math academic coaches, 3 math coordinators, science supervisor, science coordinator, and a STEAM coordinator who all report to me. And there's a variety of different things that are happening amongst our district. I had to learn pretty quickly that our coaching model wasn't working. We have 10 coaches. They had 3 buildings each. Do the quick math. There's 54 buildings. So we had schools that weren't being served. So then we had to change it. So we had to think outside the box and change it. So that was a passion of mine. We have an outdated core curriculum resource. We need to update that. We need to change that. We need to find something new. So science, our standards are changing. We need to change that. So it's like finding things that you know that are big that you have to change. And how does that change occur? It's a systemic thing. And so I lean on people that have done it. I lean on superintendents of the area. I lean on building leaders who can lead people, who can get them to buy in. And then really going down the wormhole real quick. So my current boss, the chief academic officer, we talked this summer about Bowman and Diehl's leadership frames. And there's 4 leadership frames. And there's structural, there's political, there's human resources, and there's symbolic. And we really dove into these 4 leadership frames on how to lead people, because sometimes there's 4 of them, and sometimes you dip into one deeper than the other, depending on the situation. That was something I really had to learn, because I was all human resource. I was all about people. Hey, people, people, people. But then my structure wasn't always there. So I had to learn how to build the structure, right?
True.
Totally.
True.
I love that, because when we often get in these roles, it's like a lot of people don't have anyone to turn to. It sounds like you had a great support network to turn to this superintendent or this professional friend that gave you some of that insight in leadership to strengthen your own skills. And I think that that's great, because I think there's a lot of people who are like, I got here because I was tapped on the shoulder as a great teacher, but now I'm like, ugh, now what? Where is my professional development? Where is for me to learn how to be a leader? And I think that's great for you, for sure. Was there any other learning, say, that you did that, say, someone else could replicate? Like, is there a book that you'd recommend? I know that you just talked about the 4 leadership frames, super important. Is there any other resources that you'd recommend to a person who's stepping into this role for the first time, or they're in this role and it's a year in, and they're like, I'm struggling here, or I'm not sure if I'm making a dent, but I'm like, I just want to grab something and go like, maybe I can read this, or maybe I can listen to this, or maybe I can reach out to this person. What other resources do you recommend, Rob, going through this? Because it sounds like you've got a plethora of knowledge around building the skill up.
In terms of reading, outside of that leadership frame book, I didn't do a ton of reading. I tried to dive into podcasts, and I didn't find anything that really helped as much. So there's nothing that I can like speak to on that. I was trying to read some things and nothing hit me where I needed to be hit at the time, right? So there's some stuff that I just, nothing was sticking, and everything that I heard or read, it wasn't right for the situation. With that said though, leaning on people who, we all have like an ecosystem of great leaders around us or people around us. And I learned just as much as from people that I didn't see as great leaders as I do from people who I see as great leaders. So you see people that throughout the years, whether it's, I mean, people I've worked with or around, I'm like, I wouldn't have handled that situation that way. And then I talk through like how I would have handled that situation. One of my greatest things was I had a friend that during this time, because it was a struggle, and during the time we would talk 2 or 3, 4 times a week, and he was a building leader, and we would just talk structures and talk people and leadership. And we would have deep conversations most mornings about leadership. It helped. It helped to talk through scenarios and hear somebody, a voice of reason. I think that's beneficial. I think there are other things out there that maybe people might find. I know you guys do a lot with building leaders. And I unfortunately didn't stumble upon your guys' stuff until like much later.
That's so, okay. We were probably all kind of doing some of that learning alongside one another, exactly. You know, kind of digging down the rabbit hole. Because just to kind of reiterate what you were saying, it is very difficult to find available. There's so many classroom resources out there, right? I mean, there's so many educators out there. So lots of people are sharing, lots of ideas are being shared. But when it comes to actually making change systemically, it is, there's research and we lean on the research and you read and you do those sorts of things. Maybe you get lucky and at a conference or maybe NCSM for the supervisors, there's things that are more along with change, organizational change and such. But ultimately, it really, for us, took a really long time and a lot of, I'll say just really call it experimentation, evolving, as you would say, and trying and failing and trying and failing and trying and getting a little better, but failing and continuing to kind of refine. And where I think we've learned the greatest amount has been through our working with various district partners that we have the opportunity to work with and seeing where the common challenges are, right? Because sometimes you get stuck in your own world, even though you're in a district of 50 plus schools, you were saying, or 70 plus schools like I was experiencing. And you sort of wonder, is this everywhere? Or is that just here? Is it because of how many schools I have? Or is it because of the neighborhood that we're in or the socioeconomics? All of these questions, and something that we've gained a significant amount is through assisting different districts, we've had this opportunity to kind of get this supercharged evolution. And that's really what we try to help different districts with, is trying to help them sort of recognize what are common struggles that other people are seeing and other districts seeing, big and small. And then what are some things and some approaches, some ways that people are trying to approach this? So I would love to hear, and kind of rolling back to, you were talking about four leadership frames and this idea around human resources or human capital. And I think we are all maybe attracted to that area specifically because we know that, hey, teachers, people make the biggest difference, right, on students. So we focus there quite a bit. And then we might get into a coaching role where if it's a strong coaching program or structure, that you have this opportunity to work with a group of educators. Once again, it's people with people. But as you get bigger and as your role sort of starts managing so many different people and you start to recognize that I can't actually go and be with individual educators all the time in every building, I'm wondering, how did you come to terms with that? And then I guess, how has that shifted what you were doing? Your initial thought of, I'm going to be the hero.
The balance is important too, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think we all, even though we don't feel this way, but ultimately you look at yourself and you put this weight on your shoulders as if you're going to go in and you're going to save the day, even though not because of an ego thing, but just because you want to go do the work and you're so passionate about doing the work. So I guess my question for you is, what sort of helped you to recognize that, okay, that's not going to be realistic given the current structure? And what was, I suppose, your next step in determining what you would do that could actually provide a better opportunity for people to learn, given the structure and the situation that you're in your organization?
So when I started to really read and learn about the four leadership frames, and that was back in the spring, as we were going into the summer, I was doing a lot of reading about it. And they talk about how sometimes when you're dancing on a dance floor and you see people making all the moves and you're down there and you're seeing what's happening while you're down on the ground floor, sometimes you need to go up to the balcony. And when you go up to the balcony and you kind of get to see the whole picture and see how the parts are moving together. And as you're seeing how the parts are moving together, that's when you can see if there's one part that's not moving with the other parts. So in terms of balance, like John said, trying to zoom out. And look, I'm not nearly close to being an expert. I'm still on this journey. I'm still early on the journey, but it's something that I've tried to check myself often. Every situation, every conversation, even from emails that you send and from documents that you're building, you have to be able to tap into each one. What does this look like in terms of, like, should I get more stakeholder engagement here? Okay, what's this rollout going to look like? What's the structure look like? Right. So for instance, the coach model, and this is going to be kind of tying back to our previous question, but also this one. So I saw that the coach model needed to be changed. It wasn't something that all schools would have access to a math coach. And so we needed to change that up and we need to be able to make it a little bit more focused. So out of the 10 coaches looking at their certifications, I now have 5 K-5 math coaches, 3 6-8 math coaches, and 2 9-12 coaches. And they each have 5 or 6 schools. But when they go in, like if it's a K-8 building, I have a coach specifically for K-5, but we don't go in for all K-5. we're going in for like, hey, we're going to look at third and fourth grade today. And that may be two teachers in that building. But that was a structure I needed to build. And where did I come up with that? How did I get that? Well, learning from like going to conferences and meeting people and starting to talk to people. And I'll be honest, the whole coaching model, and I'm going to give her all the credit because she got my brain going, was from Crystal Watson in Cincinnati. Because Crystal was a coach. She's now an assistant principal. But I knew Crystal was a coach. And I saw her at CMC South 2 years ago. And I said, hey, I have a question about coaching. How many buildings do you have? And she's like, 63. Well, how many coaches do you have? She said, 2. Hold on. I thought I had a bad. So how do you do this? And then she shared their model. And it's almost on demand, but focused. You go in, you have very specific things that we're working on, a specific teacher, or this teacher's like, hey, I really want to try something. Can you come in and like co-teach with me or model or whatever it is? But it's a whole process. And so I took that. But again, it's the structural part that I knew I had to make sure this thing was solid. And we're talking in December, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I went back to my structure because we're in year one of implementation and found some holes and found some things in terms of how are we keeping track of our coaching cycles to ensure that it actually flows and it's working. So like I had to go back into that. But the human resource part, I got my coaches to buy in like by asking their thoughts, what would work? And they started sharing out like this is what would work. And that's a little bit of the political frame, too, that back and forth jockeying power. But really, it was like I wanted to hear their voice because they've been doing it. So what's working and what's not? And let's see if we can build something together.
I love it. I love it because you touch on so many great aspects of designing an effective mathematics program at a district level, from structure to having that. We call it kind of like the ground floor or grassroots movement of helping design what you want your math programs to look like, but from that teacher level. So everyone has that buy-in to go like, hey, we're all working towards this because we all want to. You said you wanted this. We're going to build that in. I love that you're using that as part of your structure. When you think about, Kyle and I often talk about 6 parts of an effective tree that represents the district program. And, you know, and we always call the limbs of our tree our structure. This is like, how many coaches do we have? How do we utilize those? What's the optimization in that way? Are we best using that model or we should be using this model? You're already thinking about your limbs and you're optimizing your limbs of your tree. Amazing. From the work that we're doing, most districts that we talk to need help very initially on the trunk of the tree, which is what we call the leadership of the tree. So this is our vision. And we're like, what do we want for mathematics? What are we aiming towards for mathematics? And I think there's lots of work to be done around trying that aim and thinking about our goals. What do we want to see happen at the end of this year? What are our big objectives? We help shape that with districts. And so we always get districts that are trying to do so many things. And it's like, I got a lot of things in the juggle. I was like, I got to do that. And I got to do that. And I got to do that. And I'm like, I really wanted to do this year. And I'm on my pace to hitting that or not. And sometimes we're like, because we're in the thick of it, we're not sure. So what would you say if you're thinking about the trunk of our tree and trying to aim our goals or the work we're doing to hit these goals by the end of the year? A lot of districts are going like, I don't think I'm on track. What are you doing in your district to kind of like right the ship? Or go like, these are the things we set for the year and we're on track or we're not on track. What are some of the techniques you're using right now to kind of keep the ship straight?
I wrote a strategic plan last year. I sat down, I wrote it. And again, this is before I knew better. I wrote it by myself. I brought in, you know, a bunch of information, learning. Okay, what do I envision for Pittsburgh for math? What do I want to see happen? And I started jotting a bunch of things down. And then what I ended up doing was I was like, okay, I can't do all things at once. So let's do it in phases. Let's chunk it. What are some things in the first 3 or 4 months I think are feasible? What's that look like? Who's involved? What kind of training needs to happen? And what kind of conversations are going to have to happen? And then what's phase 2 look like? What's phase 3 look like? I tried to map it out for about 3 years. And about a month ago, because I hadn't looked at it for over the summer, I didn't look at it really. And then like we really dove into, we just are ending a textbook adoption, which was part of the strategic plan. And I said, you know what? I'm curious where I stand with my strategic plan. I haven't missed it. I haven't missed anything. It's everything that we're doing. We're still on pace for what we want to do and what we want to accomplish. But it was really hard. And you said like, oh, there's this thing. There's this thing. There's this thing. There's this thing. When I first got in there, I felt like a fireman. There's that fire. Oh, I got to put that out. There's that fire. I got to put that out. And instead of reacting, how can I be proactive and try to avoid some of that? And sometimes it takes a pretty large fire for you to go, okay, why did that occur? And it occurred because the system wasn't in place for that to be successful. So let's build that system. Let's get proper communication out. Let's make sure that everybody's on the same page. And no, it's not perfect. It's work in progress always. That strategic plan was massive for me. And being able to talk it through with, and then once I had it, I talked it through with my team, my core math team that's part of me. And I said, so what do you think? Are these feasible? And I have some very reasonable voices on my team. And they're like, you sure we can do all that right then? We might want to like move that to the second phase. And they were right. It's interesting because I have a wonderful group. I'm telling you, I have a wonderful group of people. And I got very lucky and I'm very blessed to have the group of people I have who are reasonable voices, but they all come from different, they all have different ideas. And listening to their ideas and trying to put it all together is huge too. So like I have that strategic plan, but they continue to add to like, hey, we really should look into this. Let's look at grading policy. What's our stance on calculators? There hasn't really been one. And what does that look like? And our course catalog, why do we have so many Algebra 1 offerings? And how do we streamline this and make sure that everything's aligned? And our core resources, why do we have a resource that's in science? We had a resource that was 20 years old and needed to be replaced. So we replaced it. And so there's a lot of that going on, but having really good people who you have to build them. Now it's tough. You have to allow them to lead themselves and like, hey, this is something I want for K-5 mathematics. I want this for K-5 mathematics. Okay. So how are we going to do that? And asking those questions I find is huge for leaders. Okay. So you brought me something you want to do. How do you think we can accomplish that? So instead of me being the all-knowing, which I walked in trying to do.
Yeah. As many
do. I want to listen more. Yeah. I'm trying to listen more. How do you think we can accomplish that? And if I hear a, well, I don't know. Okay, well, go think about it and let's talk in like a day and let's try to figure this out together. I'm okay with that. Now it's becoming, they bring a problem with a couple solutions or hey, they bring a situation and like, hey, I think we can rectify this by doing it this way. Yeah, okay, let's try it. Like, well, it sounds right.
A ton of things that you just said there, kind of, I'm hoping to touch on at least a couple of them and I'll go all the way back to, first off, the fact that you did spend the time crafting a strategic plan, and I'm sure it evolved, much like this idea of evolving in a leadership role happens over time. But by taking that time and thinking it through and starting that journey and then continuing to come back to it is a really important piece. So kudos to you for that. I think a lot of leaders and a lot of organizations will try to create, they know they're supposed to do that sort of thing, but oftentimes it's almost like a to-do that it's a checklist item. We're going to set this. And in a way, it's like set and forget. We're going to set it because we're supposed to. And then at the end of this year, we're going to realize that, shoot, we didn't get anywhere near any of these things and probably just start from scratch again next year, right? Or somebody new comes into a leadership role, a supervisor, whatever it might be. And off we go and rinse and repeat. And something you said, though, you said, you know, you did it alone and it almost suggested as though you're like, maybe that you might have done it slightly differently in the future. The one thing, though, that I heard you do is that whether you do it alone, right, which I think it's worthwhile exercise for people to do it alone to see what you came up with. And then from there, you get to decide what happens with it, right? Like, is it something that we then go and try to replicate it and try to do it as a group or as a team? Or do I present some ideas as a starting point? But the one thing that I think was really critical for you is that you invited your team in to have that voice, right? And you're talking about developing these great people. They're great people out of the box. But the one thing that doesn't happen if the leader of the group doesn't give them the opportunity to own what's going on and provide that feedback, provide that voice, that ownership, that authentic sort of responsibility that they want to own this work and then do this work sort of doesn't really happen. So kudos again to you for engaging in that way. And I have this funny feeling that your relationship with your team only gets stronger. It sounds like you're building a lot of relational trust there. And because you're giving them that voice, they're going to give you that voice and they're going to give you their best, right? And ultimately, it's just a win-win for everyone, right? And ultimately, at the end, who wins? It's going to be the students that win. So I'm wondering here, we could chat with you all night about this. We were chatting earlier before we hit record that we should just bring you on for a bunch of episodes in a row here. But we know that things are busy in your world and we certainly don't want to keep you here all night. So a question I have for you then is, what would you say is your next step in this leadership journey? It sounds like you've made a lot of progress. You've evolved. Your district, it sounds like, is evolving along this journey as you grow your math tree, as we call it, right? Those six parts of an effective math program. What would be your next step? And I guess for either you, your district, or your team?
Well, my team and I, we talk all the time. And we talk structures and things like that. The one thing I put in place going into this school year, which I did not have in year one, were regular meetings with my team. So bi-weekly, every other week, I meet with them one-on-one and we set our own little goals. We talk about the leadership frames, like that's something I'm bringing to them because they're district leaders as well. And then on the alternating weeks, meet as a team. So I have, you know, I'm meeting with them often and we're looking into the future of like, okay, what are we going to do? What we need to work on, what we're going to be working on now is monitoring what we're doing. If we're looking at the coach work, being able to monitor and adjust or monitor and continue if it's working. We need to come up with a way to effectively determine whether or not what we're doing is effective. And that's incredibly hard. There's not a simple answer to that. And the more you look at data, the more data looks right back at you and goes, guess what? There's more of us. Yeah. So that you have to think.
What do you think this means? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's coming from everywhere, right? And you know, you have this program, you have this assessment, and there's all these different things. So trying to figure out a way that's going to work for us to monitor and adjust is one major thing that we have moving forward. The second thing, and hopefully this ties in with a lot of the listeners, we're about to, I guess, depending on when you listen to this, by the end of January, we're going to have hopefully board approval on a new K-8 core curriculum resource textbook. There's a lot that goes in that. For anybody listening, it is not just, hey, we got this. All right, here you go. Please don't just hand it to your teachers. Please don't do that.
Right.
Literally, we are starting here in a couple of days and we're going to start our planning. It hasn't even been board approved yet, but we need to start the planning. How are we going to implement this? How are we going to roll this out? When can we get the materials for the teachers? All the technology piece of it. Do we have single sign-on access? Do we have it with Schoology? Do we have it with our student information system? Does it collaborate with that? What about our English language learners? What about the special education department and how do they fit in? And so we're going to have to sit down and kind of make our own little mini strategic plan on the rollout and the implementation. Selecting, as difficult as my team might have thought it was at one point, that was easy.
Yeah, yeah.
The implementation. That's where the real fun begins.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's two things because we have, you know, the coaching model. We want to make sure that that's being effective. But then we also have this very large thing dangling over our heads right now about with the new textbooks that was the first time we've had new core curriculum resources in 7 years. So it's time and it's going to be a shift in mindset. It's going to be a shift in how we teach. And then once that gets rolled out, then it's again going back to the monitoring piece.
Yeah, I'm going to say what I love about in two ways or two things I love. What I love is how you're systematically thinking about all of these pieces as like you're the CEO kind of going like, these are all my moving pieces. And you're saying, look, we have to get the coaching model right before we bring in the curriculum, because if we don't, then that's going to be a mess. It's like, if we don't have this rolling the way we need it to roll, then how are we going to support this when this comes in? So I love that you're thinking about all of those pieces instead of just going like, you're right, we need that and we need that and we need that. And I think that's the other part that so many, I said this before, is like so many districts struggle with deciding on what's important and then sticking to it. But thinking about, we always reference the districts we work with is like, let's decide on some big objectives. So these are the big things that you want to strive for. And then let's set measurable key results that you can hit this year, next year. And these are the things you want to work towards. But the key thing is measuring that. Sounds like you've got that monitoring in place, that measuring in place. That part, I think most districts are missing. And it sounds like you're well on your way to like making that happen. And I love that about the work that you're doing. Rob, if you could leave the listener today with one big idea. And we've been talking all about district leadership, structuring. You talked about the four pieces as well of leading and leadership. But what would you say is, if you're talking to a leader right now who's a math coach, but also maybe in your position at, say, another school district, what would be the big idea you want to leave them with from this conversation?
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
Probably don't forget your joy. All of this that I'm doing right now, and people can argue this, but I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. I don't know what that reason is in the moment typically, but there's moments when you get into leadership, district leadership, building leadership, coaching, especially when you're executive director or if you're a CEO or a CAO, it's easy to slip into losing joy and losing the focus on kids. I encourage anybody and everybody, if you get into that role, don't forget to go out and visit some schools and see kids in action. They will brighten your day pretty quickly. If you pop into a first and second grade classroom, there's nothing but joy there. They smile. Dr. Goldie Muhammad's work with her five pursuits and talking about joy. We need to remember the joy. And I try to bring joy. And for those who are listening who know me, I try to be a different person. I'm a different cat. I bebop around the office and I tell jokes and I'm high-fiving people. It's like, I'm sure I'm not your stereotypical executive director, but I'm not trying to be. I'm trying to be me, authentically me, and just, I enjoy life. I enjoy kids. I enjoy education, and I enjoy what I'm doing like crazy. So I'm going to have joy. And I had somebody tell me the other day, hey, don't let anybody steal your shine. Don't let anybody steal your joy. And I said, well, I appreciate that, but also you're not going to steal my joy.
I'm not going to let you. That's fantastic. That's a great message. And I think when people, you know, kind of what popped into my mind is when people, they go in for all of those reasons that you've mentioned, right? They go in for the kids. They go in because they truly want to make a difference. And I think sometimes if you're not intentional about it, as you are here, and as you shared that, hey, you're going to be authentically yourself, you're going to be joyful, and you're not going to allow that joy to be taken from you. You're being intentional about that. And if you're not, I think that's when you're susceptible to potentially losing it. And the reason why, I think, is because people try so hard and put so much pressure on themselves to go in and be the change, right? They want to go in there and they want to do great things. And I see this happen in the classroom with teachers who lose the joy, right? Because they're trying so hard and they feel like maybe they're stuck in the mud. Or you see people that are in a leadership role that they just feel like, hey, I don't have enough of the resources, be it human capital, be it the physical resources, be it, you know, whatever it is. And I think taking that time to be intentional and to really reflect on why they're there. And then also, I think giving yourself grace is really so important to recognize that if this was easy, then a lot of districts would have solved these problems. We wouldn't be in a situation where this is such challenging work. So that you're fighting a great fight. And I think that's a great message for people who are listening and going, you know what? You've got to look at this and you've got to be joyful, especially since in a leadership role, especially your energy is contagious, right? And you certainly want your team to be feeling that. So good on you that you have been intentional and continue to be intentional about that. And Rob, we want to thank you again for coming back onto the podcast, sharing some updates on what's on your mind. Again, we had a long list of items that we could have dove into here today, but this leadership role conversation has really resonated with both John and I as we're deep in the thick of it with our district partners through our district improvement program. So we appreciate you letting us chat and, you know, see what's going on in your world. And hey, we're wishing you all the best. And folks, if you want to reach out to Rob, where can they find you?
I mean, I'm still technically on Twitter, so, or X.
It's whatever it is.
Yeah, at Rob_Baier, B-A-I-E-R. So, I mean, outside of that, I mean, our district website, you can reach out there, try to find me there. I think I dabble a little bit on Twitter or X or whatever it is, but it's not, I don't go there as much anymore. There's a, between, I know, John, you and I share this in common, between doing all the math things and all the science and STEM things that I do, I also coach basketball for like all my kids and love hoops. So I have found the bandwidth, and how you talked about giving yourself grace, the bandwidth I have to be able to even look at social media anymore. I don't, and I never thought I'd ever say that, but I don't.
Yeah.
We grow. But yeah, so yeah, we grow. And if you can come to Pittsburgh and walk into a basketball gym, you might find me there. I don't know. So
maybe I will. Maybe I will. Rob, we want to thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to head to Pittsburgh and hit that gym and see you at one of the next conferences that we head to. Take care.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
See you, Rob. Have a good one.
Well there, friends, what a great conversation with Rob. I don't know about you, John, but I was thinking it was like all sorts of parts of our math program tree were glowing for me, right? I mean, I think one, the first and foremost, I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit or the firmly placed trunk, the firmly developed trunk, and that is the leadership piece, right, of our tree. The leadership piece is so key, and we had an opportunity to really dig into this leadership portion of an effective mathematics program. And what I sort of was envisioning in my mind is, much like a tree grows over time, Rob has been developing his own experience, his expertise in this area. And, you know, I think a lot of us, especially those who are in leadership roles, be it if you're just leading, maybe you're chairing a grade level team, maybe you're chairing a department or a department headship, or you're all the way to a director or a superintendent or something of that nature at the district level. The reality is that there's really nothing that can prepare you for that experience, especially if you're coming straight out of the classroom. Even as an instructional coach, oftentimes people go from the classroom to become a coach. When you get into that role is a very specific role. And what we do in the classroom might inform some of the things we assist educators with. The one thing we're not getting is all of the important nuances that we need to understand from a leadership perspective. And the big takeaway I had from this conversation there, John, was that Rob noticed that, you know what, I can't go and I can't individually go and try to make the change with every single teacher in the district, that there has to be something different. And this is a conversation that you and I have with many of our district partners on a regular basis, because guess what? We want to help. We want to do something. We want to feel like we're doing something. So we often want to get as close to the action as possible. But in reality, that's a really, really difficult model. And it's an ineffective model, ultimately, because there's just too many schools, too many educators, and a single individual can't do it. So we need to zoom out and we need to start that vision planning and we need to really take time. It's not just about setting a vision and then sort of forgetting. We really need to be coming back to the table all the time and iterating through, how do we do it better? What's working? What's not working? How do we know it's working? How do we know it's not working? And this is the work that obviously both you and I are loving in our district improvement program. What really hit you there, John?
Well, what I loved about what you're saying is when he took a zoom out and talked about the trunk of the tree, the leadership of the tree, the vision of mathematics at the district level, we also got a little bit more granular to talk about the limbs of the tree, which is our pedagogical moves, our logistics, our planning, our PD program. What does it look like on the ground? And how do we support the teachers? Like, what are the structures we're using for professional development? The limbs of the tree in different models of professional development that work and different models that maybe don't work. And then we got down to that part. I like getting into the weeds a little bit when we think about that. And we do that with our districts. Like, what structures do you have access to? What things can we reshuffle to make a difference in the way you want to make a difference? So Rob got clear on that, what they're doing. So in his district, and gave you some insight to think about. So if you want to say hit rewind, yeah, rewind the episode. I think you just hit play again. And then you can re-listen and get those details. If you're like, wait a minute, did he talk about that? Go and listen again. So those are two pieces of the tree. That there are six pieces of the tree, six pieces of every mathematics program or a strengthening a mathematics program that we know have to be worked on to have that full success that you're looking for. You can head on over to growyourmathprogram.com and you can fill out a report or an assessment that gives you a report, and that report will tell you which of the six you're needing some strengthening on, or the most you need some strengthening on, which ones that maybe you're already doing well at, but at least you'll know. And then we give you some next steps on how to strengthen or how to take that element of the tree to the next level. So go to growyourmathprogram.com, fill out that assessment, and get your free report.
I love it. I love it there, John. Hey, as usual, all show notes, links to resources, including the growyourmathprogram.com link that John just shared, and transcripts can be read from the web or downloaded to take with you. You can find them on the makemathmoments.com website at any point. This is episode 271. So a direct link would be makemathmoments.com/episode271. All right, my friends, until next time, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training, an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/four stages to start this free training.